that, I'm left wondering whether they actually care about the health of me and my family, or if they're just pushing sales to enrich themselves. There were charities I wanted to support, though. Think how many lives I could help and maybe even save. Charity evaluators like GiveWell estimate that $3,000 spent on targeted malaria prevention, for example, could save a life in Nigeria. Eventually, the book advance offer got so high, reaching a level that donating all of it would do more good in the world than anything else I could imagine doing, that I couldn't say no. So I didn't. I said yes, and I'm so glad I did. How Not to Die became an instant New York Times bestseller and went on to sell more than 1 million copies. It's been translated to more than 30 languages. I don't know if I could even name 30 languages. Beyond all the money that got distributed to effective charities was the impact the book was having on readers' lives around the world. Every day, the stories would pour in. Though there are fleeting moments when I regret publicly posting my personal cell phone number and email address, I was joyfully overwhelmed to hear about all the life and health transformations. I'd always had warm receptions at my speaking events, but there was a palpable shift after How Not to Die came out. People would wait in book signing lines for hours to tearfully share how much my work had meant to their family. I realized just how intimate the connection can be between writer and reader. By the time we first met, they had already spent days, maybe weeks, curling up with me on the couch. It can be such a powerful bond. This book's reach allowed me to serve and help in a way I'd never been able to before. I knew then that I'd be writing books for the rest of my life. My professional trajectory isn't the only thing that's shifted over the past decade. The COVID crisis helped lay bare the limitations of our pill-for-every-ill sick care system, which focuses on managing the consequences of chronic disease rather than treating the underlying cause to potentially reverse it or prevent it in the first place. Approximately 80% of protracted disease and premature death may be attributable to choices each of us makes on a day-to-day basis. Yet for too long, this lifestyle lever has been largely ignored by mainstream medicine. But that's changing. I'm honored that more than 20 years ago, I became a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, ACLM, a professional society dedicated to using diet and lifestyle interventions to treat the roots of many of the chronic diseases that plague humanity. Lifestyle medicine has grown from humble beginnings to become one of the fastest-growing medical specialties. Now, with more than 10,000 clinician members, ACLM is more than just a professional association. It's a galvanizing force for change. Most medical schools now have student-run lifestyle medicine groups, and hundreds of residency programs for budding doctors have incorporated a lifestyle medicine curriculum. Thousands of physicians in the United States alone have become board certified in lifestyle medicine. I'm so proud to have been in the first cohort. A global network of national lifestyle medicine associations have sprung up, dedicated to the use of daily healthy habits to prevent, treat, or cure chronic disease. What started as fringe has become more and more mainstream. Look what happened in New York City. Consistent with its namesake, the Big Apple became a leader in food policy innovation. All 11 New York City public hospitals started offering plant-based meals by default. Healthy food in a hospital? What a concept! Patient meal satisfaction exceeds 90%, and the hospital saves money in a win-win that should be replicated throughout the country and around the world. Lifestyle medicine clinics were started in all 5 New York City boroughs. Its public schools have meatless Mondays and plant-powered Fridays, and under enhanced food standards, sugary drinks were removed from vending machines and processed meat eliminated from the city schools, hospitals, prisons, homeless shelters, and older adult centers. If the country's largest city can institute sweeping food reform, why can't other cities follow suit? I'm thrilled to present this 10th anniversary edition of How Not to Die. The needle hasn't moved as much as I'd